This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
And a good Wednesday afternoon. What a gorgeous day. Went on an hour and a half long walk this morning.
I went on
the
a 3-hour walk.
Did you really?
How far did you go?
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Golfing is not a walk.
Oh.
You have a cart?
Walking and exercising involved.
From the cart to the hole.
Oh, please. No, it was cart path only. And Sam, I want you to tell everybody about the balance challenge that you showed us in the newsroom yesterday. It's very
uncoordinated.
Twisty.
It's
and
called the windmill.
It's called the windmill. Yes.
I am in the balance portion. I've been taking courses or a course to become a certified personal trainer, and I just got to the balance portion. And so they rank different balance exercises so that you can get a proper assessment of a new client for what, you know, what level of
how far training. Gone am I?
Exactly. And one of the beginner exercises for the balance, I got to stand up because I have to reenact it even though nobody can see me.
How is this beginner?
This is beginner, and I couldn't believe it. That's why I brought it to you guys, to have you guys to try to do it, because it is pretty difficult for me to do as well. Is you have to be able to raise one foot up. That's step one, right?
Raise
if
one foot.
If you can't do that, you've got no balance and you're doomed.
Okay.
And then you put your arm straight out to the side with, you know, your hips are hinged, you're leaning forward a little bit, and you have to be able to rotate your shoulders.
Like a golf swing.
Left to right, kind of like a golf
swing. Rotate.
It's called the
rotate.
Windmill. And so you're supposed to bring each wrist past the knee in the rotation to get that full rotation.
Okay.
And that is called the windmill. And it is considered, believe it or not, a beginner level balance
what
challenge.
What does it say to you if someone can or cannot do that? What does it mean?
If they can do that, we can, you know, start talking about more aggressive exercises because you have the core strength, and I don't mean core as in the middle of your body. I do kind of mean that, but it's, you know, it's like a house. You have to build the foundation first. So then you have the foundation where you can start getting into more in-depth exercises where you're actually growing strength.
What does it say if somebody can't do it like
you?
Practice.
Okay.
And you start with just balancing on one foot, balancing on the other foot. Then you do it with your eyes closed. Then you...
With your eyes closed?
Yeah.
I don't want a closed head injury.
Visual is a big part of it. So you have to be able to do it. And if you can do it with your eyes open, then do it with your eyes closed because it's something called proprioception. It is the mind-to-muscle connection where you know what you're doing without looking at what you're doing.
So this says it's great for hip mobility, adductor strength, side body core and shoulder strength. It is a versatile part of any strength training, and it's also great to help enhance your yoga practice.
Okay.
I will tell you this, Scott and I both tried it. I was able to do it, and I was able to do it, I think, because of golf. Scott, you were not terrible, but
I wasn't good.
But it was a little tougher for you to do it.
Yeah. Wasn't my best performance.
If you'd like to build up, I can bring you some more lower level beginner
for the mature male.
Right. And we can build your balance because there's little tiny muscles all over your body that help with balance. And you just haven't used yours in 35 years.
Okay. We'll start with you in a chair.
Chair stretching. I am not.
Followed by bingo and tapioca pudding.
Doing chair exercises. I remember when I was in the best shape of my adult life, which was 2 years ago.
2030.
No, it was in the winter and spring of 2023. I was working out twice a day. I'd go to the Lenexa City Center early in the morning and then go to my normal gym at 9 o'clock.
Looked good, felt good.
I did, and I got to get back. I'm going back to the gym for the first time in 6 weeks tomorrow, been away because of a broken toe that Dana didn't believe, and that's fine. But I'm going back tomorrow. I can finally walk and jog, and I feel good. So I'm going back tomorrow morning.
Stretch.
Starting the yogging, huh?
Yeah, soft, Jay. It's this new tradition, yogging. But in the mornings, there were times when I would go to Lenexa City Center, and I would see more mature people sitting on the basketball court in chairs doing like this kind of stretching, like this, where they're sitting up in the chair and they're bending forward to see how far they can go to touch their toes.
Well, there's a whole thing of
senior fitness. I'm not doing that. I'm not a senior, Dan, director of useless information, jerk air. I'm not doing chair exercises.
There are some good chair exercises that you could do.
That says old.
Can we bring up really quick, and this is... This will bring this conversation full circle in a way that you probably don't see coming.
But like
you
a windmill.
Saw that Tiger Woods, while exercising, he was not golfing when he got this injury, tore his Achilles.
Yeah, rupture, whatever that
ruptured
means.
The Achilles, working out in preparation for the Masters. Mm-hmm. So he's out indefinitely with a torn Achilles.
Should have done more balance challenges.
Well, Sam, I don't know. I was talking to my dad about this today. I said, oh my gosh, did you see Tiger's out? And my dad said... We don't know this to be true, but I am throwing this out. He's obviously an enormously public figure. That over the years, there have been rumblings within all of the golf community, not just Tiger Woods, that there were certain players who were maybe juicing just a little bit to bulk up. Okay?
He certainly did.
And that one of the...
Not juiced, but
like,
bulked up.
One of the fallouts, if you will, physically, I did not know this, could be when you are doing that to bulk up, it, I don't want to say it attacks your muscles, but it weakens the connectors, my dad said.
The ligaments holding your muscles to your bones.
Yes, yes, yes. And so he said, I'm not saying there was steroid use going on or not with any of the players. And there are a lot of players where people have gone, wow, Bryson DeChambeau completely changed his physique overnight.
Well, so did Tiger.
And so did Tiger. And Dad said, I don't know if he did or not, but a lot of his injuries have been this connective tissue type injury.
Well, now keep in mind, though, with Tiger in particular, his bone was sticking out of his skin less than 2 years ago.
Is it the same leg? That was the other question my dad had.
It's the same leg. And he came back to the golf game far too early. He needed to sit out for at least 2 years.
He
needed to rehab.
Wow.
He needed to build that muscle back up. And he chose to take the aggressive route. And I'm sure, you know, that people always think of juicing as one thing. It's not. There's not just one chemical that you take for juicing. There are different elements of testosterone boosters to make it so that you can recover more quickly when you're trying to do something like recover from a compound fracture and get back on the golf course.
Right.
And so there is a chance that he took some completely legal performance enhancement options, and that is why he did not have the structural strength.
I want to clarify, his latest injury is on the opposite leg to which he suffered the significant damage in the 20, my dad thought it was, in the 2021 car crash. It's the other leg. And I said to him, if he wasn't golfing, he didn't throw his back out. How do you throw out your Achilles? Like, how do you do that?
Just I have no idea.
Doing a windmill exercise with kettlebells or whatever. And my dad said, well.
He was probably doing box jumps, if I had to guess, and landed a little awkward.
It makes me sad. I want, the sport is better when he is in it.
Yeah, and because people like me are more inclined to watch it.
I wish more than anything this had not happened. But
speaking of sports and exercise, Scott Peterson got his ass whipped by a fellow inmate during a prison yard pickleball match on Sunday.
We're allowing our prisoners to pickleball?
Yeah, why not?
They can play basketball and football.
Lift weights, watch TV. Peterson, 52 years old, was playing a game of pickleball at Mule Creek State Prison in California. When another prisoner took exception to the convicted murderer's playing style.
I bet he was in the kitchen.
And served him up a butt-whooping. The inmate was reportedly set off by Peterson smashing the ball directly at his body during the match and aired his grievances in the form of hooks and jabs. Though Peterson did suffer injuries, he did not need to go to the hospital.
We call that move the Dana Wright direct strike.
Golly, he was convicted 21 years ago.
How has that been 21 years?
21 years ago.
That child would be 21 years old.
Yeah.
Wow.
He would have been 31 when he was convicted. 31. Wow. Here are the top 10 happiest cities in America.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a local one on the list. Would you care to guess any?
Overland Park.
Number 5.
I knew it. I was going to say Lee's Summit, and then I went with OP.
That is the last local city.
What about Colorado Springs or Denver?
Colorado doesn't even make the list. By the way, I will tell you that 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 cities on the top 10 happiest cities list are in California.
And that includes all 3 of the top 3.
Really?
That is correct.
Well, that has to be San Francisco.
Number 9.
Yeah, San Diego.
Fresno.
Fresno. No.
Does like Napa, Sonoma count? Because trust me, I've never been happier in my entire world.
Truckee.
You have to think smaller.
Yeah,
suburbia.
Like Palm Desert, Palm Springs.
So here we go. Number 10, Huntington Beach, California.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Number 9, San Fran. Number 8, Scottsdale, Arizona. By the way, none of these cities are east of the Mississippi.
You know why Scottsdale's on there?
Because of all the golf?
Everyone's retired. Yep.
Oh, yeah. Number 7, Madison, Wisconsin. Not a single city east of the Mississippi. Number 6, Lincoln, Nebraska. Number 5, Overland Park. Okay. Lincoln's a beautiful city.
Yeah.
I've lived there. It's nice.
Hmm.
Number 4, Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Number 3, Irvine, California. Number 2, San Jose, California. Number 1, Fremont, California. Here's what they write about Overland Park.
Oh, yeah.
This happy city in Kansas, Overland Park, has a population of 197,000. This city has a lot of great things going for it. Low poverty and unemployment rates, access to good health care, and high emotional and physical well-being scores, according to our study.
Huh.
Residents here also love taking part in leisurely activities in its many parks and green spaces. Overland Park also has a low separation and divorce rate. Should have moved there.
Brought it right back down.
Would have taken that score up.
These studies, they isolate these cities and they don't include the fact that it's in a place like Johnson County or the whole KC Metro. And
yeah.
Well, they did take the 180 most populous cities. It's not every single city could be up for consideration.
No.
Would never
or Westwood would be on there, you know.
Yeah. It's like Scottsdale. I mean, that's in the Phoenix Metro. It's like literally right next to downtown Phoenix.
It's like Sun City, Arizona, which is part of Phoenix Metro, and it's just a bunch of old retired people. I know this because my grandparents live there, or lived there. My aunt still does, and they drive around in golf carts on city streets to go to the supermarket.
Sounds like Western Shawnee.
Kind of. 913-586-7798, 586-7798, here on Dana and Parks. Story here out of New Orleans from NBC News. Other men have accused the Louisiana woman linked to the death of a Super Bowl reporter from Kansas City of drugging and robbing them, and she should not have been on probation. When the Kansas City reporter was found dead last month, according to the state's top prosecutor, Danette Colbert, 48 years old, was convicted in October of computer fraud, theft, illegal transmission of monetary funds in connection with a November 2021 scheme that the victim said targeted his life savings.
7 to 10 years in prison.
David Butler said in court records and in an interview with NBC News that Colbert left him for dead after she drugged and robbed him of more than $80,000 in cryptocurrency in the French Quarter. He did not get drug tested. No charges linked to that drugging allegation were filed. But last fall, Colbert was sentenced to 5 years probation, ordered to pay Butler $50,000 in restitution.
Where do you think she got that $50,000?
Probably from her next victim.
Bingo.
Somebody else's Bitcoin account.
But the Louisiana Attorney General, Liz Morrell, said in a statement this week that Colbert was not eligible for probation when she was sentenced. In the statement, General Morrell noted that Colbert's status as a habitual offender, a classification that allows prosecutors in the state to pursue stiffer penalties based on the defendant's criminal history. And what were you saying, Sam? She should have gone to prison for what?
I believe the sentencing guidelines for the crimes of which she was convicted, 7 to 10 years.
And should not have been given probation because of her past criminal history.
Even with zero past criminal history, she could have been given 7 to 10 years. For whatever reason, the judge said, oh, you seem to do this all the time. Well, hey, we'll see you later. Have a good day.
The whole thing just makes me so crazy mad. You have to keep in mind, every time we hear about her prior victims, those are the ones that we know about.
That's true. There are so many others.
And I mean men who have died, Scott. How many other men in entertainment cities in the United States went to bed after they were drugged, they don't wake up, and it's not investigated as a homicide because they think, well, he was out at the bars, he had too much to drink, maybe, you know,
cheating on his wife.
Yeah, all that stuff. Or like, there are so many of those men who survived that weren't believed that you have to ask yourself how many men died. And it was accidental overdose.
I hate to keep mentioning it when this topic comes up, but is that rooted in the stigma that men can't be a victim in that situation?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
It is definitely rooted in that stigma.
Found dead in that hotel room. It wouldn't be, she, you know, just took some bad coke, you know? She should have known better.
Well, I mean, if you need to see an example, and I do believe she is a victim, look at how the story out of the Dominican Republic is being portrayed versus how a lot of these men-related, men victim stories are being portrayed out of Vegas and New Orleans.
Yep.
I mean, few people are denying that this young lady from the University of Pittsburgh down in Punta Cana, Dominican Republic, is likely the victim of a crime.
They have a person of interest that they are talking
to. And they've named him as of today. But, I mean, you hear that story and you think, okay. You know, you immediately go to that part of your mind that says she is a victim, she was taken advantage of, something bad happened. Where if it's a dude, you know, well, he probably wanted it.
Would it have even made news if it was a dude spring breaker who went down there and disappeared?
Yes, an American spring breaker, period, going down there and disappearing would make news.
But if it was a guy, to Sam's point, we wouldn't go straight to he was taken advantage of.
You're right.
Likely assaulted.
You're right.
Maybe even sexually. We would say, he probably had about 15 beers and walked into the ocean and never walked back out.
Do you remember that poor child, Scott, who, you have to help me remember, left on a, like, what was that? When we were in high school, it was Model UN. He was in Chicago.
Oh, I know.
In high school. On a Model UN high school conference. I'm almost positive it was Model UN. And he had red hair. Remember how red his hair was? Mm-hmm. He goes to that city and they've got him on surveillance, you know, that night. Like, he wasn't a big party or like all of those things. He has never been found. And so there are a handful of these cases that did make the news over the years.
Jesse Ross.
Yep. God bless him.
From UMKC.
I knew it. I knew that was local. You have to wonder, now that you're starting to hear that there are rings of people that are doing these things, how many of these missing...
It was in Chicago.
Men, I knew it was in Chicago. How many of these missing people, was it something like that, where the end result or the end game for the criminals really was robbery, where they didn't necessarily mean to murder somebody, but it ends up happening?
Jesse Ross was 19 years old. He was a sophomore.
God bless him.
At UMKC.
He went
missing after a Model UN conference in Chicago.
I remember the words.
Walking out of the hotel at 2:30 in the morning on November 21st. He has never been found. Man, how do you remember that stuff?
I don't know.
Wow. Quick break. She is Dana Wright. That guy over there is Sam Stevie III. My name is Scott Parks here on KMBZ.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code SHAVE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code SHAVE. Enjoy.
Think warm. Think palm trees. Think baseball. Hi, I'm MLB.com's Matt Monaghan. The long, dark freeze is over and spring training is finally here. If you're a baseball fan looking for a quick, easy way to get all the scores, top stories, and best sound bites from Florida and Arizona, you're in luck.
I don't think people realize how good we are. I don't even know if we realize how good.
The Morning Lineup Podcast, a short, less than 10-minute baseball highlight show, is available anywhere on any platform you listen to podcasts on, 5 days a week. We can't wait to meet you there.
Just a quick follow-up. This is from Fox 4. There are concerns from neighbors in Shawnee as investigators are looking into two crashes now along K7 Highway in less than a week. One of them was a double fatality. Neighbors believe the intersection of 47th and K7 is extremely dangerous. Said Jeff Volsky, I think 47th and K7 is one of the most dangerous intersections in Johnson County.
You said as much.
For those of you unfamiliar, K7 has become an increasingly busy highway on the far west side of the metro, about 2 miles west of 435. And at 47th Street, years ago, they brought K7 over Johnson Drive. There used to be a stoplight there. Now Johnson Drive goes under K7. 47th Street, which is the next intersection to the north, is still a stoplight intersection, and 47th Street is a residential street with neighborhoods on each side all the way down 47th Street until you get to Deffenbaugh.
Is the issue the fact that people are running the stoplight?
What I think it is that people are, you know how it is, when a light turns green, you just go, right?
Yeah. Yep.
And the traffic on the highway is going, that's 65 miles per hour right there.
Yeah.
And I'm going to beat that light. I got to get up to Leavenworth or Bonner, wherever I'm headed. And so they are running that light or racing against the yellow as somebody coming off of 47th Street starts to make their way into the highway area to go south or north. And then they get T-boned. Last week, Shawnee police said two people died in a two-vehicle crash at the intersection of K7 and 47th. It happened at 11 o'clock in the morning. Police said the driver of the second car was not hurt.
Mm-hmm. Stoplights on highways in major metropolitan areas have never made any sense to me.
It forces you to Frogger across. I've never been over there, but you were trying to describe this to me the other day. Is it, or are people just running?
What I think is happening is that people are, when you're on 47th Street, you can either turn right onto northbound K7, or when the light turns green, you can turn left onto southbound K7. What I would bet is happening every time is that light turns green at 47th Street. You enter into the highway intersection and somebody is going northbound on K7 thinking they're going to try to beat that yellow. And they don't.
We've seen the same issue on 71 Highway for years.
Yep. Hannah Hill, who lives nearby, says, I see cars and trucks, especially big trucks, running this red light here at 47th on K7 almost every single day. Mm. It is scary. I don't go immediately when the light turns anymore, mostly because I'm afraid that I'll be the next person that gets hit. I wonder why they can't retime the lights so until they can figure out what to do with 47th Street, which, by the way, I think they ought to just... I mean, it's not too out of the way to go south to Johnson Drive and get onto K7. I don't know why they don't just shut down 47th Street at K7. So you just can't get on the highway here.
Scott and I had another question. Remember sad, horrible story where the firefighter driving the pumper in Westport ran the light and three people died. Listen to this, Sam. Do you hear this? The families of the fire truck crash victims, the families of the victims just helped install a safety system at the intersection where this happened. Listen to that. This is something that is, yeah, it's a head scratcher that the city did not do this and truly amazing that the families did. Now, when you drive through the intersection of Westport Road and Broadway, there is a new safety system installed to help emergency responders make that area safer. It comes more than 3 years after that crash there involving the Kansas City fire truck. Mm-hmm. It was December 15th. You remember the story. A firefighter for the Kansas City Fire Department was driving Pumper 19. It sped through that busy intersection, Westport and Broadway, with lights and sirens on, but it ran the red light. The fire truck then hit a car driven by a man and a woman. That car then careened into a pedestrian, if memory serves.
Correct.
And all three died, okay?
And that's then right. Into a building.
This is from Channel 5. In 2023, KCTV5 learned the city had no plans to install something called Opticom at the intersection of that deadly crash. That's that thing, you guys, that when first responders are blaring through, it trips the light to Correct. Make their light green, and it stops your light red.
Those sensors are real. They are not an old wives' tale. Nope. On many major intersections, they have those lights there to
Here's what I did not know, and this is interesting. Pumper 19, the actual fire truck that caused this wreck.
It was speeding as well,
yes,
was it not?
Pumper 19 had an Opticom transponder. However, the Westport and Broadway intersection did not have a receiver. You have to have both. So the emergency vehicle has to have
Correct.
Its part. And then the physical intersection has to have its part. I don't know how the cities decide. You can't have them probably at every single intersection in the world.
Why can't you?
Why wouldn't you have it at Westport and Broadway? So listen to this. The families of the victims helped get the technology posted on the stoplights at that intersection. They paid $7,628 for the Opticom materials and donated it to the city of Kansas City. The city then turned around and spent $9,000 to install it. So there's your answer. It's $7,000 for the equipment, for the receiver, and it's another $9,000 to install it.
Why did the families have to pay the money?
Bingo. And they are bigger, better human beings than I am.
Why does it cost $9,000 to install it?
I don't know, Sam.
Put a couple screws in and run some wire.
But you're looking at $16,000 to change an intersection when emergency vehicles go through. Well, so, you know, you start adding up intersections in Kansas City, Missouri. Who decides where those go?
I'm with Sam. Why can't a public works department guy or gal just install it?
Because you have to buy it. You have to buy the Opticom receiver.
I understand, but it doesn't. If they already work for the city, they're already on a salary. It shouldn't, unless you have to hire out a contractor.
I see what you're saying.
To put this thing in, which, by the way, if you do, then fire the public works department.
Yeah, it should be a 5-minute install as far as I'm concerned, and I have no knowledge of how these things are installed.
Listen to one of the, this is the restaurant owner where two of the victims worked. She says, we think those are extraordinarily important. This never would have happened. Jen and Michael would still be here if those were installed. I am thrilled that one is installed, she says. Wait, I am thrilled that one is installed. But I am also sort of embarrassed that the families had to do that.
It's horribly embarrassing.
They lost their people, and then they had to fund something that the city should do, and they do all over the place. We have one outside our door for the streetcar, she says. The families are extremely grateful that this has finally come to pass, and as everyone might expect, it is part of the healing process, well, quoting there from their attorney.
And the families didn't have to do this. They did it out of the goodness of their heart. But where was the city?
We see this as a way to honor her memory and pray she can be at peace knowing we've taken steps to make the intersection safer. Yeah. That is horribly embarrassing for the city.
It sure is.
Horribly embarrassing.
But I do take issue with, if these things were installed, this would have never had happened.
Listen to this
truck
quote.
19 was speeding.
Yeah, listen to this quote. We shouldn't be passing the hat for something as important as an emergency sensor. Yeah,
I agree.
Well, it was speeding. It was raining. And, if you remember correctly, they had been called off from the call.
That is right.
There was no reason for them to be driving at any speed, period.
He got his job back, as I recall.
I believe he either took it to court or took it to the city, and they found in his favor, and he was returned to service. That is correct.
Phones are ringing. I'm curious, if you are an emergency responder on either side of state line, you can remain anonymous. Does every single emergency vehicle have the Opticom, beacon going out, but not every single intersection has the receiving end of the beacon? And how do the cities decide, where are we going to spend that money? Is it closest to hospitals, which would make sense, Scott? Do you pepper them around like St. Luke's or KU Med or, Menorah, wherever, those intersections?
But here's another question. How do you determine who gets to hit the transponder? Let's say you have an incident at, let's say, 36th and Main. I'm just pulling an intersection out of a hat. And you've got a fire truck heading south on Main. They're currently at 29th, okay? But you have a police car also responding, going east on 33rd, wanting to turn right onto Main.
It's a beacon. It just does it.
That's what I'm saying. If those two emergency vehicles are going to the same intersection at the same time, who gets priority?
I don't know. It would probably be the first. Whoever arrives first is my guess. That would be rare, though.
Would it?
Yeah.
913-586-7798. When we get back, a Lenexa woman, an elderly Lenexa woman, saddled with a water bill that, if it were to be accurate, she would have to be pumping out of her house 5 gallons of water per minute. Per minute. She's in Lenexa. She's 83. We'll get to her in just a moment. Here on Dana and Parks, 913-586-7798. Let's go to Larry in Western Shawnee. Larry, hello.
Hi, how are you?
We're doing well. Thank you for asking. Thank you. Go ahead, buddy.
Yeah, I was calling to let you know, I'm a retired firefighter for the city of Shawnee, and I was a driver with them as well. And like I was saying before, I don't know about the installation of the poles, but as far as the cost of the Opticoms, they are very expensive. But as far as the transmitter goes for the truck itself, each unit in the fire department or each unit that has the Opticom system is set up with a code that flips that and triggers that monitor that's on the stoplight. And that way they know what unit has tripped that Opticom to go through it. For the fire department, if you're running a fire truck and an ambulance at the same time, the fire truck's transmitter is going to trip it first because it's the bigger unit.
Got it.
And so to answer Dana's question about how often it happens where two units come together at the same intersection, believe it or not, it happens quite often.
Really?
So, yes, it happens very frequently. but as far as where you put those set up the Opticom at, typically they're on your busiest intersections and your most heavily traveled intersections. So, for example, if you were going down Shawnee Mission Parkway and you're following a fire truck that has its emergency lights on, you can watch from Plum Road all the way down past Guevara. It's going to trigger all those lights green.
Now, Larry, is there an emphasis on putting these systems on things called blind intersections? For example, the intersection that we were talking about with this fire truck and this deadly wreck, it is considered a blind intersection because the buildings are so close to the intersection.
Yeah, it would have to be out where the sensor on the truck, because the transmitter on the truck is inside the emergency light bar.
Oh.
So it would have to be able to see that sensor and be able to trigger it from a distance for it to be able to work.
And you're saying that it would be that there are certain agencies that basically have what's the word I'm looking for here? First response, if you will. So fire trucks have dominance over the light system compared to ambulances or police cars. Do I read that correctly?
Yes. And most police cars if I now I'm speaking for the city of Shawnee because that's really all I know the most. But most police cars do not have these on their units because they have a lot more units,
yeah,
and they're so expensive to install. But they're also not as big. It's a lot harder to stop those fire trucks than it is to stop a police car in an intersection.
Truth. Okay, man. Hey, I appreciate the call. Thank you, Larry.
Hey, have a great day.
You do the same. Be safe.
Someone texted me and said the same thing, that very few police cruisers have those.
And also, I do believe instead of turning a light green, it turns all of them red.
What?
Well, it would be depending on which direction. Yeah, it turns yours green and it turns everybody else's red. It would be a cluster if everyone's was green.
Yeah, I mean,
it turns all of them red, meaning
we're going to need all the ambulances.
The fire truck knows for a fact that they can go through that red light with no problem, but just to keep anybody from being in the intersection, whether they're turning left, whether they're trying to cross the path.
Now, wait a minute. Why wouldn't it turn every light green in the path of the fire truck? Because otherwise all the other traffic is now stopped and you can't get around them.
I'm talking about at a specific intersection. It turns, so there's four lights at an intersection.
Right.
It turns all four red.
I don't think that's right.
A number of people on the text line are saying that is how it works, and a caller said that as well.
But that wouldn't work because everybody else who's in traffic is now stopped, and you have, as the fire truck, you have no way of getting around it, no way of getting through that light without other people running a red light, which they're going to be hesitant to do.
Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I'm just going off of what texters are saying.
By the way, I looked this up because I'm fascinated by ne'er-do-wells. Unauthorized use of traffic signal preemption transmitters can result in serious legal consequences, including imprisonment.
That's a thing, huh?
So don't be going out thinking you're going to go on Amazon and just start flipping all the lights your way, people.
You know, in when I was in Lincoln, Nebraska, I don't know if they still do this or not. If once you got a green light, as long as you went the speed limit, you were going to get green lights all the way through. They were perfectly timed that if you went the speed limit, you would get a green light nonstop.
Metcalf is the same way. By the way, one of the texters who said they all turn red just said, no, Sam, you're wrong. They turn green. Okay, what is it? You're the same texter.
They're not all turn green.
But Sam, I wasn't picking on you. I was picking on whoever wrote that on the text line. Because turning the light red in the path of a fire truck does the fire truck absolutely no good.
You want the cars in front to
keep moving and start getting over right.
Get the heck out of my way.
Yeah, keep moving and get over because we're coming through. Wow.
That's deep in the vault.
NKOTB? I'm not even mad. I'm impressed. Quick break for the news with Dan Weinbaum coming up in just a moment. Sam Stevie III, Dana Wright, my name is Scott Parks. Enjoy this tune from, I believe it was 1988, here on Dana and Parks.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at KMBZ.com.